WFM. With Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to the Rachel Blackmore of DJs, the superstar Jenny Green. What a way to kick off the weekend here on 2FM. Jenny's back tomorrow at 7 o'clock with the Electric Disco. It's Friday, the 19th of March, and this is Game On.
And on the way between now and 7 o'clock, Henry de Bromhead, Ruby and Jane Mangan reflect on an Irish week to remember at Cheltenham.
They're on to the running now. It is Minella Indo for Jack Kennedy. Ah, Plutar trying to come again. There's a length between them. The Cheltenham Gold Cup goes to Ireland. It goes to Minella Indo. Minella Indo for Jack Kennedy, who points to the skies. He has beaten Ah, Plutar and Rachel Blackmore. Her near perfect week ends with a second place in the Gold Cup.
Ahead of Ireland versus England, my old Lions roommate Ugo Monya on why England's win over France meant so much.
I call them rugby flirts that just watch five or six games a year. Like, that is brilliant advertisement, not just for English rugby and French rugby, but it's just great for our game. So it made me really happy.
As well as that, we've got Alan Cawley standing by as there's the small matter of the Champions League draw, the Europa League draw, the FA Cup weekend, and the SSE Electricity League season, which is about 20 minutes old.
Game on 2FM.
Yeah, it's all on Damien O'Mara and Donegal Callan, bringing you right up to Blonda Tracy with the official chart show at 7 o'clock. We'd love to hear from you. You can text on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Damien, how things?
I'm not too bad at all. We are going to get straight down to business.
Let's go.
You and I have loads of time to chat.
Yes.
But yesterday he brought us the man of the day. Today he brings us the man of the week. We're going live to Cheltenham and Ruby.
Yeah. Hiya, Damien. How are you?
Very good. You've a very, very special guest alongside you, I'm told.
I do, Damien, but I'm shooting a bit in the dark here. We're trying to do this off an iPhone, so I'm going to plug the headphones out and see if it works for you. But Henry de Bromhead is standing beside me, and Henry, it wasn't a day of days, it was the week of weeks. And would you like to start?
Well, it was incredible, really. The whole thing, it hasn't really sunk in at all yet. I suppose honey in the champion hurdle, it feels like a long time ago now. She was amazing. Rachel, brilliant all week. Put the kettle on in the champion chase. Aiden on her, he was brilliant for the Darmadies. Honey, obviously, for Kenny Alexander. And Bob Ollinger for Brian Atchison and Rob Corr. Their first winner at Cheltenham was fantastic. And then Tell Me Something Girl yesterday. I mean, I'm using all the superlatives. I'm running out of them now at this stage. Tell Me Something Girl, brilliant. Quilixos today, and then obviously culminating with Indo in the Gold Cup and APA Plutard second. It's just even listing it all back now, I still can't believe it.
I rode horses for your dad. I've ridden for you. It was a much smaller operation. Did you ever in your life think that this is where you'd be standing?
No, I have to admit, not at all. It would have been a dream to have a winner at Cheltenham when I first started training. It seemed like a long way away, and you know, we've worked hard and we've had our ups and downs, but to end up with a week like this is just, it's unbelievable.
It's a funny one. When the Jigginstown stable left Willie's, he bounced back stronger. The Potts horses left you, and you've only gone in one direction, which is up. The investment that came with it, but the bunch of horses you have, where did you find them all?
Oh, look, I mean, it's our clients are unbelievable. Firstly, we have an amazing team, as you know. In any yard, you need that behind you. We have an amazing team behind us, working with us, which is fantastic. And then it's our, you know, we've incredible clients that have the faith and confidence in us to let us go and buy these gorgeous horses. You know, we've bought a lot out of Irish Point to Points. And obviously, Plutard came from France, and various owners buy their own horses. And I don't know, to be honest, we've just managed to assemble this team of horses. And yeah, it's incredible. It's all come together this week.
What would you have taken on Tuesday morning?
One.
Which one?
Just one. I mean, I don't want to say, I don't know, to be honest, but definitely one I would have taken. I kept telling the kids coming up to it, you know, if we get one winner, that'll be great. I mean, it would have been a disappointing week, But never imagined to get six, and the races we've won, it's just incredible.
Your horses looked incredible. You obviously aimed them at here, because a lot of them, some of them, in my own humble opinion, have almost outrun themselves.
Yeah, you know, we probably did, to be fair. Certainly with the likes of Indo, the Maloneys love having horses here, and we always start at Cheltenham and work back. And I suppose you would, not unlike you guys, obviously, and Willys, you know, you do, with those better horses, you probably always start the season with your eye on Cheltenham, I would feel, and sort of work back and try and plan towards landing here as best you can. But I think it's so competitive in Ireland, you're kind of nearly trying to peak a few times throughout the season, and it's tough because it's so hard to win races at home.
You mentioned your team, and because of what she's achieved, she would overshadow in the media some of what you've achieved yourself, but Rachel was incredible to have on your team this week.
Oh, she's incredible to have on our team the whole time. I'm so happy for her. Probably the highlight of the week for me, because it encompasses most of our week, was seeing her being crowned champion rider at the meeting. She's an amazing person to work with and for the ultimate professional. And we feel very lucky to have her.
The Gold Cup, the 1-2, she obviously rode the wrong one. I could see it in her when she pulled up. I had that feeling when Denman crossed the line and I was on Cato Star, and the little bit of shine it'll take off the week for her. But it must have been for you to stand and watch your two horses jump the last in the Gold Cup. That must have been a surreal feeling.
Absolutely. Of course, being as negative as I am, I was looking at album photo thinking he was starting to run on and ours had started to race too early and we were going to get caught and whatever else. It was an amazing feeling. I have no doubt Rachel's going to win the Gold Cup very soon. It's unfortunate that she went with A Plutard this time, but look, she's brilliant. She's had a fantastic week, and yeah, you know, she'll be fine.
Are you proud of what you've achieved?
Oh yeah, you'd have to be. You know, absolutely. I'm proud of what we've all done as a collective, as a team. The crew back home worked so hard. Everyone here, you know, they were like. Unfortunately, they have these step machines now, and they're all able to tell me they were doing 40,000 steps a day over here. Like, you know, the work you see is the work they put in here. Like, it's nonstop. And I have to say, I'm proud of the whole thing. You know, it's a great team effort, and feel very fortunate to be where we are.
Well, I'm delighted for you, and I'm proud of Irish Racing. Well done, Henry Bromhead.
Thank you.
Damien, it was an incredible week for Irish Racing, and you know, for Henry Bromhead to win the champion hurdle, the champion chase, and the Gold Cup all in the one week, it was just phenomenal.
Can I rephrase a question that you asked Henry? You now at the end of the week, and I know that the biggest race of all is the one to Birmingham Airport on a Friday evening, so as you reflect in the departures lounge, Ireland 23-5, over 20 different owners have won, like this has exceeded anything that the Irish contingent would have gone to Prestbury Park and expected or hoped for.
Way beyond that, Damien, way beyond that. I mean, the only thing is now, when we were having five winners and England were trending 23, no one ever reminded them of that. But it is absolutely phenomenal what Irish Racing has achieved, and it hasn't happened overnight. It's been coming for a while. It starts with the investment for the very top, the owners investing in Irish Racing, and that trickles down through the trainers, back through the people who buy horses to run in Point of Points, back to the pin hookers who will have bought them to sell at store sales, and back to where it all begins, to the breeders. I mean, people often say politically that racing and horse and greyhound fund gets too much money. It returns 30 euros for every euro it gets, and it goes and succeeds and achieves. And the last 12 months has been a pretty ordinary 12 months for everybody, but this was one hell of a good news story.
Ruby, just on it, like, I can't remember any other sport we've been as dominant in. Like, when you think of it, we're the All Blacks for me of racing. To see us so far ahead, it was incredible. And just to hear the emotion in your voice on ITV today, just wrapping it up, it must mean so much to everyone in the industry.
Oh, it does, Donegal. I mean, look, Irish people are synonymous with horses, with horse racing, around the world. And you turn up, and it's not so much turn up to beat the English, because Cheltenham couldn't have been more accommodating to all of us. And what they put on, the accommodation they put here for the stable staff, the way they looked after the trainers and the jockeys, the COVID testing that went around getting us here, this wasn't bringing your average rugby team to Cardiff. This was 138 people, all like three COVID tests before they left, all quarantined here in a bubble, all the testing to get us home. Cheltenham put it all on and made it happen. And we've come I'm only on the tail end of it, but the riders have come, the Irish riders, Rachel Blackmore, Jack Kennedy, Paul Townend, they were the stars of the show, they were the best riders on show. Willie Mullins, Denise Foster, Henry de Bromhead, they were the best trainers on show. The whole thing was just, to me, it was as close to perfection as you can get.
Ruby, before we let you go, just a word on Rachel, who has been the story of the week as much as anything else. And six winners this week. She had three in her career at Cheltenham in advance of this. We have known for years how special she is. How significant a week has it been for her in terms of the impact it will have on her career beyond the island of Ireland and the spotlight that's on her and the doors that presumably this could open for her if she chooses to push through them?
It's huge, but it's huge for females in sport, full stop. Like, every time Rachel Blackmore got up on a horse this week, she was on equal pay to all of her male rivals. She had an equal chance of winning the races she was going out in. And tactically, she was the best all week. What she's achieved is incredible. And the admiration I have for her, but it's not just the winning. Like, we're all hear so much about mental health and how people are struggling at the moment. And you look at Rachel, she got as many falls as she did winners, yet she kept picking herself back up off the ground. Jack Kennedy, who won the Gold Cup, has broken his leg three times and his collarbone five times. He's 21 years of age, yet he kept picking himself back up. Envy Allen, his biggest ride of the week, fell here yesterday. He picked himself up, went out and gave the horse the last Mount Ida, as good a ride as a jockey has ever given a horse, and then wins the Gold Cup today. And the ball wasn't bouncing all week for Paul Townend. He must have felt like he was beating his head off a wall, yet he still went out as a getting beaten the nose on Billoway. He went out and pulled it out of the fire on Colerevy. To me, I admire people that get up and get on with it. And I must say, the way the Irish jockeys conducted themselves this week was immense.
Yeah, there was that in spades. Ruby, thank you to you for being with us all week and bringing us to all of them and really bringing the experience to everyone. Safe home, and we'll chat to you on Monday at 6.
Cheers, Donners.
Mind yourself.
So that's Ruby. He's getting ready to fly home. We've a load to catch up on. It's Munster 0, Benetton 0, 15 minutes played. Do you have pictures of this, Benny?
Yes, I do. Mine, you caught me, did you?
Mine keep freezing, so yeah. I hope your pictures are better than my pictures.
No, and as Ruby was saying, there is landmark moments. Joy Neville, obviously, is TMO in this match, who set a kind of pathway for everyone else coming underneath. And now we have a next referee in Holly Davison is refereeing this game. So lots of young talent on show for Munster, but you're right, still nil all. And you know, hopefully an opportunity. There's some big rugby coming this weekend and we'll be chatting about it, Damien.
Yep, nil all as well in the opening game of the SSE or Tristy League Premier Division season. Drogheda United entertaining Waterford FC, half an hour played there, and that is scoreless. We've a lot to fit in between now and 7 o'clock, and we are going to chat soccer, the Champions League draw, the League of Ireland return, and everything else that crosses our minds after the break. Stay with us.
Addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Okay, a lot going on with soccer, with Champions League, Europa League draws. League of Ireland has returned, and we've FA Cup action this weekend. We're delighted to be joined by Alan Cawley and Fergal Brennan. Alan, we know we're up and running with the League of Ireland, but tonight Shamrock Rovers taking on St. Pat's. You can see that in RT2 at 7:30. And I know everyone's buzzing to see our brilliant league return, but I'm wondering, what are you wearing, my man, on TV?
I won't let you down. Don't you worry about that, Dunica. I'm actually out in Talla here at the moment, and the place is looking absolutely magnificent for, as you say, the start of the league, Dunica. The draw of the match is up and running, kicked off there at 6:15. But I'm really looking forward to the game. As you said, it's live in front of the TV cameras tonight. Shamrock Rovers, the champions, won the league at a canter last year, albeit 18 games. But they were the best team by a good stretch. But I don't think they'll win it at a canter this year, to be honest with you. I'd still have them as favourites, Dunic, but I think Dundalk and Bohemians will be a lot more competitive this year, plus we will have a full season. And St. Pat's, who are obviously coming to Talla tonight in a Dublin derby, they've signed very well, I think, in the off season as well, but they're under a bit of pressure to have a good season. They've been disappointing in recent seasons under Stephen O'Donnell last year as well. They were disappointing, so they're under a little bit of pressure to have a much better season and maybe challenge for Europe. I don't see them challenging for a league, but Shamrock Rovers are the proper favourites, but they won't have it all their own way this year.
And Alan, it's the merry-go-round that we endure at the start of every season, that you can look at every squad. We perhaps don't have the same level of wholesale changes across the board that we have maybe from season to season in other years, but it is going to take a little bit of bedding in, irrespective of what work has gone on behind closed doors over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, a lot of the teams, Damien, and that's just the nature of the league, as you say, a lot of turnover of players year on year. They're a bit more stable, but the only ones really, I suppose, that have an assembled squad and that have only brought in four players is Shamrock Rovers, because their squad is so good. Now, they have lost Jack Byrne and Aaron McAniff, the two, in my opinion, the two best players in the league. We all know about Jack and how good he's been over the last couple of seasons, but also Aaron McAniff was every bit as good and every bit as influential, so they're massive players to try and obviously replace. They've brought in four new players, Sean Hoare and Sean Gannon, defensive players from Dundalk, Chris McCann, a midfielder, experienced midfielder, and also the exciting Danny Mandrew coming from Bohemians. But as I say, none of them four will replace the quality of Jack or Aaron, and that's no disrespect to them either, it's just that Jack and Aaron are so good. You look at Dundalk, they've made a lot of changes this year, I suppose, from the squad that they have. A few lads coming in from outside, there's a little bit of uncertainty around them, but I watched them last week, Damien, in the President's Cup, and I was very impressed with them. Big physical, strong outfit, and I think they'll be a lot more competitive this year. Your team, Bohemians, have also, I think, one thing Keith Long has always done over the last 4 or 5 years, he's always recruited very well despite losing some of his better players. And again, I feel he's recruited very well in the off season, bringing in the likes of Bastian Heary, Georgie Kelly. And if Georgie Kelly hits the ground running at all, I can see Bohemians also challenging the top two of Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk.
You know how to butter me up, Alan. Before we move on and talk about the Champions League draw and bring Fergal in, Pat Dolan has an article in the Star today, and he's talking about Dundalk, and we all know this situation around who's in charge, who's not in charge, who has the pro licence, who doesn't have the pro licence. And he's making the argument that the FAI should have done more to get a place on a pro licence course for Filippo Giovagnoli, which I completely disagree with, because the owners and the management at Dundalk knew what the situation was when they brought him in to replace Vinnie Perth. Am I right, or is Pat right?
I didn't see Pat's article, but my view on that, Damien, is I don't think it's fair on the people and the lads that have paid out good money to go through the process of achieving a qualification of a pro licence, and now they're bringing lads and giving jobs to the likes of Stephen O'Donnell and, as you say, Filippo Giovagnoli. Now, they're only going by the rules that are in place, so it's not a criticism of the lads or the clubs, but I don't think that rule should be in place if they're going to allow people come in that don't have the qualification and be managers, albeit hidden behind the fact that they're saying Shane Keegan is the pro licence holder, or in St. Pat's case they're saying Alan Matthews. I feel sorry for the likes of lads who are out of jobs, who have the qualification, who have paid out good money, Damien, and it's not cheap to go through the whole process of getting all your badges and a pro licence qualification. So I think something should be done about the rule, and I don't think it's fair that lads are allowed hide behind the fact that somebody else on the coaching ticket has a pro licence. I'm all for giving young lads as well an opportunity. I love to see Stephen O'Donnell being a young manager, but either do away with the rule or don't allow it, the fact that he can be a manager and others can't.
Yeah, that's one that's going to rumble on. Fergal, we got the Champions League draw today for the quarterfinals. Man City take on Borussia Dortmund. Porto and Chelsea. Bayern Munich take on PSG, and Real Madrid are up against Liverpool. Do you think Liverpool would be happy with that draw, the way it worked out for them?
I think on paper, when you look at this, before the draw was pulled out, everyone had their eye on Porto, and I think Liverpool, Chelsea, Munich, etc. will have all been kind of hoping they would be the ones to get Porto. Not that they're any mugs. They did brilliantly against Juventus in the last round. But in a very strange way, despite Real Madrid's brilliant history. They're the most successful team in the history of the Champions League. I actually think this is one of the better results that Liverpool could have pulled out of the hat. I know that might sound a bit strange given, as I say, their success and the history and the relationship they've got with the competition, but this is not the Real Madrid of 12 months or 18 months ago. And yeah, Liverpool have had their own big, long set of problems so far this season, but I've said quite a few times on the show that eventually things do have to turn for Liverpool. Like, they do, in terms of the injury issues and the form, etc. It does have to turn around. And based on their performances in Europe so far this season, particularly the two Leipzig games in the last 16, they made enough chances to win three or four games. And in the end, we're very comfortable getting past a very, very good side in Leipzig. And I think away from the pressure of the Premier League and the constant questions of what's the problem, what's gone on, why are they not able to defend their title, I think they're able to kind of let themselves go a little bit and just concentrate on the game in front of them. And pre-Klopp, and certainly before they won the Premier League title, that was the way Liverpool operated. They were an excellent team in cup competitions and in Europe because they were able to play in these one-off or two-leg scenarios that benefited the style of football they played and the way that they wanted to operate. And I think, based on the way the season's panned out, based on the way it's probably going to end for them, it'd be a hell of a turnaround if they were to push on in this and get into the last four, the final, and maybe even go on and win their seventh. It's, as I say, it has to turn. The corner has to be turned at some stage. And given the fact that they could have got the defending champions or PSG or Manchester City at this stage, I think this is actually on the side of the more positive for them.
And just on that, Fergal, like, obviously today was the last draw for the year, so we know the permutations. So the winner of Bayern against PSG will face the winner of Man City or Borussia Dortmund in the semi-finals, and then one of Real Madrid or Liverpool will face either Porto or Chelsea. And you look at that, it appears to me on the face of it that there's certainly one easier half to come through, and it's the half that Liverpool and Chelsea find themselves in.
Yeah, definitely. And as I say, that goes back to the Porto situation. And despite how good they were against Juventus, they are still the weakest of the eight teams. Real Madrid are having their issues. And Liverpool will be looking at this and thinking, if they can get past Real Madrid, they've obviously got history against them. It's a rerun of the 2018 final, which was controversial for many reasons. If Chelsea beat Porto, which you'd probably expect them to, Liverpool, a month down the road, could have certain players back from injury, would have the positivity of beating Real Madrid. You know, hypothetically, if they do, could be back in the race for the top four. They'll fancy their chances then to go and beat Chelsea. Obviously, memorable Champions League semi-finals against Chelsea in the past, that they've had the edge on them in them as well. And then you look at a final situation in Istanbul, if you're looking for another little bit of Liverpool-related history. But that's when the huge test will come. And for me, the likelihood is that it will be Bayern Munich or Manchester City that they'll face. And based on the way the last 12 months have gone, you'd expect Liverpool to slip at the final hurdle. But we've seen so many times in the past with them, when they've found themselves in a final and maybe not being the favourites, that they've come out on top. So Liverpool will look at this, as you say, as a slightly easier situation. You will not catch Jurgen Klopp actually saying that, or any of the Liverpool players saying that. But they will have their eyes on, if they can keep steady, if they can maintain their professionalism, that they should get through.
Alan, Spurs crashed out last night of the Europa League, but Man United and Arsenal know who they'll face. They'll Man United taking on Granada and Arsenal taking on Slavia Prague. What have you made of these draws? How do you think they'll be players going into them?
Yeah, I think both of them will be happy enough, Dunnock, as well. Granada, obviously, from La Liga, and I don't think La Liga is as strong as it once was. Obviously, Fergal has outlined the problems that Real Madrid have, Barcelona as well. Man United beat Real Sociedad comprehensively in the last round, the round before the one this week as well, against AC Milan. So I don't think that'll hold any fear for them. They obviously will go on to maybe play Ajax or Roma. I think that'll be a much tougher game for them. Both of those sides will be decent enough, especially Roma. And I think Arsenal, on the other half, I think that's the tougher of the two. Slavia Prague have already beaten Leicester. They went to Ibrox last night in the second leg and put on a brilliant performance as well. And I heard some of Steven Gerrard's comments in between both legs, just speaking about the way they play Slavia Prague, and almost he compared them to almost like a German team in their efficiency. So that'll be a really tough tie. Arsenal were poor, I felt, against Olympiacos last night as well. So I think Man United would be the happier out of the two English clubs left in the Europa League, Dunica.
Alan, you mentioned Rangers. John Kennedy, the interim manager at Celtic, confirming to Celtic won't give Rangers a guard of honour at Parkhead when they meet in the Old Firm on Sunday. Sunday. Subject that's been brought up, several people chatting about it. It was the same 2 years ago when we were champions. Although, if I'm being honest, I don't think such a fuss was made about it, and I don't see it as a big issue. Should they give them a guard of honour?
I think so, Donica, yeah. Or Damien, sorry. Yeah, like, there's going to be a big fuss over this now over the next few days, but that's just the done thing, I suppose, in any league, regardless of religion and rivalries. I know it's a lot different there, but I think that's just the done thing, and it's just the way it's fallen that they've obviously won the league and they're playing Celtic now. I think they should give them a guard of honour.
Fergal?
Yeah, I would agree with Alan. It's been similar situations in the past with massive rivalries, not in the same context as Celtic and Rangers, but Arsenal have done it to Manchester United have done it to Chelsea and so on and so forth. Yes, there's obviously an extra layer when it comes to Celtic and Rangers, but it is part of being one of the most successful clubs in the league. You just have to do it, and I'm kind of surprised that Celtic have taken this stance.
Okay. I don't disagree with you. Donica, you'd agree?
Yeah, well, yeah. It's the right thing to do.
It's the sporting thing to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we used to say it, there was times you have to clap them on and kick them off. You know what I mean? Yeah. There comes a point in it. Alan, there's Premier League this weekend. I'll go to you. We're surely going to get a reaction from Spurs. They're taking on Aston Villa, and looking at some of the Villa's guys' fantasy football team, Jack Grealish could be included.
That's how you judge it now, Donica. Just go with the fantasy football. The world we live in nowadays, oh my God. I'm glad I'm just watching the matches and not involved, Donica. But yeah, you would expect a response, but all is not well. You look at Mourinho's press conference last night after the match, after a horrendous performance as well, and I could only imagine how fraught that dressing room is at the moment in terms of the players and the relationship with him and Mourinho right now. So I would fancy Villa to probably beat them. The FA Cup is the big one really over the weekend, Donic, as well. Everton and Man City, that's probably the standout game. Chelsea, who are doing a great run really under Tuchel since he's come in, should fancy their chance of beating Sheffield United. And the big game then is Leicester and United Sunday, and that'll be tough to call because Leicester are having a great season as well.
Just Fergal, looking at a big one, Brighton taking on Newcastle United. Is there still a battle at the bottom there? Do you think they could be pulled into this relegation battle?
Most definitely. I think the way you look at the picture as it is, neither of them are anywhere near, say, Burnley, who are just above Brighton, have got a bit of a cushion there, 7 points outside the drop zone. So you would say if one of these two teams can win this game, that'll suck the other one right down into it. Fulham are playing Leeds tonight. Based on the way they've been playing, you wouldn't put it past them to get a positive result, and that'll give a bit of extra pressure onto Brighton and Newcastle. Obviously, we mentioned on the show last night, good bit of Irish interest in this one as well, with Aaron Connolly, Kieran Clarke and Jeff Hendrick all potentially playing. There'll be a lot of eyes on Graham Potter, and whether he gives Connolly a run out, I would say not, based on his press conference yesterday evening. But in terms of the Premier League and the shake-up, if Brighton can win, a bit of home advantage might give them the edge. That'll just push Newcastle down a bit further, and you would say then it's a straight shootout between Newcastle and Fulham, because Sheffield United are gone and West Brom are essentially gone already.
Okay, lads, we'll leave it there. Thanks for your minutes as always. Alan, get the TV plug in, just give it one more lash there now. If you're not selling, you're not here, so go on.
7:30, Damien, yeah, we're on the start of the league again. Everybody's looking forward to it, so tune in, RT2 folks, and we won't disappoint.
Colly, before you go, can you give us any indication what you're going wearing?
I'm like the milk tray man tonight, Donica.
Donica wants you to slide into his DMs with a picture of your rig out.
Honestly, Damien, I know he's got a spring outfit, you know what I mean? It's the new wardrobe.
Says your man.
I can't wait to see
you. The only thing, you're quick to jump on my clothes, but I tell you, I won't be wearing a fake tan like you do when you're on the television.
You can't slag if it's true, Collie. You can't slag if it's true.
Jeez, lads, this could end up in the High Court yet. Alan, enjoy the game. Thanks for being with us.
See you, lads. Thanks.
Half time in the game between Drogheda United and Waterford FC. It's nil all. I mentioned my pictures of the rugby keep freezing. So yeah. It was 0-0. No. It froze. Then it came back. It was 7-0 to Benetton. Then it froze again and it was 7-3 to Munster. So you're going to have to tell me what's happening.
And you're right up to speed. That's exactly right. Benetton scored a try. They're throwing around the ball for fun, to be fair to him. And then JJ Hanrahan got a penalty to knock it over. So Munster trailing at the moment, 7-3 to Benetton.
More rugby to come. Stay with us.
With Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein. Game on. Rugby.
Okay, during the week, Marie and I caught up with former English winger Ugo Monya. Ugo joined us as part of the Tackle Your Feelings campaign hashtag Be Kind initiative, and here's how we got on.
Game on, rugby.
Okay, Saturday's Six Nations game between Ireland and England might not be for a Grand Slam, a championship, or even a Triple Crown. But when Ireland take on England, silverware is a distant second to national pride. To help us view the game from rose-tinted glasses, we're joined by England and Lions winger, and much more importantly, one of my favourite roommates of all time. Ugo Monya, how are you, brother?
I'm really well. How are you getting on?
I'm great. Oogs, we'll get to Ireland and England coming up this weekend, but I must ask you first, Wales going for a Grand Slam, can you believe it?
It's unbelievable. When I kind of cast my mind back to the autumn, I think I actually said that they look like a sinking ship, and I guess the results probably dictated that. They'd only won three matches that year. I think it was Italy twice and Georgia, so that was it. So there was nothing really for me to hang my hat upon. But I guess for you and I in the media, when we commentate on games or review them, we just look at the 80 minutes, but we don't perhaps get the level of a broader vision of what Wayne Pivac was doing. And now when you look at where they're at, you're thinking, hang on a second, the almost results in the autumn was secondary. He just wanted to blood a load of youngsters. And now the strength and depth here he's got, mate, is just phenomenal. Rhys Ammett, Callum Sheedy, Kieran Hardy, both of them, all young fellas that have come through, coupled with your old second row partner, Alan Wynne-Jones, and, you know, George North, 100 caps, and they're flying. So you can only be happy for them because they were in that period of real turbulence, and my word, 80 minutes away from doing it again.
I think everybody's watching on with just a mix of shock and awe of what they're achieving. But when you break it down, like, what is it? Like, what is it that Wayne Pivac is doing? Is it game plan? Is it personnel? Is it attitude of the players? Like, what is that the special formula that he seems to have that he can get the best out of the players that he has in his squad?
It's a really interesting question, and I'll almost break it down to last year and this year. When he first came in, I mean, it was an impossible job to try and fill the boots of Warren Gatland. I remember when David Moyes took over Sir Alex Ferguson, and you're set up for failure because you always like look back to those incredible times, those moments of what the former coach actually delivered. He then tried to play an expansive game last year in a year that wasn't referees or the game wasn't rewarding expansive play. Now, what he's done is, I think, built probably one of the most competitive squads that we've seen in the last decade. And momentum's so key. In a five-game tournament, is what the Six Nations is, you win your first couple and all of a sudden you're flying. Wins creates positivity, creates a different mindset. And now they're flying. They're able to twin the brutal game, which is almost back to how it used to be, with a far more fluid, expansive game with the likes of your Liam Williams, your Josh Adams and your Rhys Ammett. So he's combined the two of them together perfectly over the last few months. And, hey, I mean, who'd bet against Wales not winning the Grand Slam right now, eh?
It's going to be interesting, though, because there'll come a point in this game where they have a chance to win a championship. It's interesting, who's on the pitch, what do you think there? Do you go after a Grand Slam or do you win a championship and try to get them in close to a losing bonus point?
It's a good question, but let's put it this way. If Wales were to not win the Grand Slam now, it'd feel like a disappointment right now. Like, you've won Grand Slams, you know how hard it is to take or how hard it is to complete. So at this point, at the start of the tournament, win a Six Nations, but now when you're 80 minutes away, anything but a Grand Slam will feel like a disappointment. And that's mad in terms of the mindset, the perception, how everything changes in just, what, a couple of months. So I think they have to remain positive and go there to win the game and win the Grand Slam. I think if you're just trying to go to negate what the opposition do, then you're probably stepping away from everything that got you into this position in the first place. You might play within yourselves. The beauty is with that Welsh team is they have so many leaders that have been there, done it, but also worn a lot of scars over the last decade as well. And they'll be able to, I guess some of the younger players will be able to lean upon them to understand what some of these moments are going to feel like. Reece Samet's never been in a moment like this. Callum Sheedy coming off the bench has never been in a moment like this. But there's been lots of players that have been there, done it, worn the T-shirt, and they're going to have to be huge again come the weekend.
They were written off, like, universally, I think, by everybody. It's probably fair enough to say that. Does that stuff matter to players?
Yes and no. I think it's great when you can prove the doubters wrong. You know, it wasn't my only motivation, because I think your primary motivation needs to be intrinsic. But the external noise helps. They say we're no good. They say we can't do this. They say Alan Wynne-Jones is over the hill. He's too old. I mean, that's brilliant. I love it. I mean, I don't know what it's like for you, Donica, but in my career, there was lots of great emotions, but some of my favourite emotions was playing away and being booed. Yeah. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. When you stood in the centre circle and they're booing you, and you look around and you think, lads, it's just us. It's just us, and I'm going to rely upon every one of you to shut these lot up. And that is quite an empowering thing, because no one else can do it when the whistle goes. It's just you. So for them to potentially win a Grand Slam, they'll definitely win the championship. To win a Grand Slam, turn around and silence a few critics, including myself, it's great. But as a pundit, it's actually really cool when you're wrong. It's great when you say in the autumn that Wales were sinking ship and then they win a Grand Slam. It's brilliant. It's great to be proved wrong. It's fantastic. You say a player can't do it and then they do it. That's brilliant. So, I think if they can marry those emotions, that intrinsic motivation plus block out external noise, you know, they'll be fine.
Game on, rugby.
So, Dougal Monia chatting to the lads earlier this week, and a reminder that there's coverage, radio coverage of the game on Saturday Sport over on RTE Radio 1 tomorrow afternoon. Donal Lenihan alongside Michael Corcoran, and Fiona Coughlin and Eddie O'Sullivan alongside Joanne Cantwell.
Super, super stuff, yeah.
How are you feeling about it?
I'm nervous about it, of course. Like, they're a really good team. I don't like what they're going to come with. I know they'll try to take us on physically and match it. But, Damien, if I could ever be in a dressing room, it would be for this one. To run out with CJ in his last game, you just want to leave it all out on the pitch. And the beauty about him is he'll do that as well. Normally, a team huddle before a game, you'd say, let's do this one for CJ. But you know the type of fella he is. Mm. He'll want to be man of the match.
And you know, it's interesting. Andy Farrell kind of casually dropped it into his press conference during the week that, yeah, we've known for 6 or 7 weeks as a management team. Mm. So CJ has put in the performances he put in over the course of this championship, knowing this is the final furlong.
But we were chatting about this, Damien, and it's the thing I love about him. It doesn't matter to CJ Sander whether it's the Dragons away in Rodney Parade or England in the Aviva. Every week he goes out and gives everything, and every ball he carries back. You know, when you get knocked back, you don't go near a ball again, you know, for a little bit of the game. CJ always fronts up, so I think we'll see a response. I know everyone's talking about it. We shouldn't have to rely on emotion, but if you can't rely on emotion against England, forget about it.
I'm sure, come here, you wouldn't have won in Croke Park in 2007 if it wasn't for emotion.
Yeah, that's true. When it wasn't great, Hayes crying like a baby.
Ah, come here. I've spoken to people before. Like, I was there working that day, and the silence between the anthems as we waited for God Save the Queen to be played, and I don't know, like, it's just, it was hair on the back of your neck stuff that was never going to be repeated. But anyway, it was interesting. We've been WhatsApping about various things over the course of the day.
The Descendants.
As you do when you're on a programme like this. So I listened to a 12-minute interview with Eddie Jones earlier with Chris Jones from the BBC, and I found it so compelling that I listened to it twice.
Yeah, I've listened to that one.
He's going on about, like, you know, you guys in the media, you bring poison, and I spend my week getting the poison out of the players' heads. And it's like, don't expect us to play anything like we played last weekend in the greatest game we've seen in the championship so far. That they're just going to come and bring, to paraphrase him from a couple of years ago, they're just going to bring war tomorrow.
Yeah, and Chris Jones was looking for that. He was there, why don't you play like this every week? And he was pretty much blaming the media, wasn't he?
Yeah, come here. It's all our fault.
it is your fault. You're one of us now,
so, you know, it's your fault. But can I just, you know this rubbish that gets, this guff that gets talked about, there's one for the dressing room wall.
Yeah.
Does that exist?
Probably not anymore, but earlier, probably in my career, it definitely did. And it's something Ugo Magna mentioned there, and you can listen back on the podcast. But people saying you're done. And I remember Kerry Sweeney, we played the Dragons in Europe, and someone fed him a line that we were like Dad's Army. And I promise, we had it up all, not in our dressing room, but out by the urinals in the toilet, so everyone would see it before they went to the toilet. And like, I remember it was the team talk, we'll show him who's Dad's Army. And like, Rog actually knew him, and he was there, lads, he's not a bad fella. And we were like, we don't care, you know. He's just,
yeah. But like, there's actually so much at stake for the two teams this weekend in terms of, you know, fighting it out for whatever, potentially second place in the table. Like, it would be a disaster for either coach were it to go badly wrong tomorrow.
Yeah, it would. Although it was interesting, I heard Brian O'Driscoll speaking, and I think he made a valid point. We need a performance, just something maybe to see a little bit more in attack. And look, we are definitely transitioning. We've gone from being dictated to how to play to a coach that's telling you, I want you to put your head up and make the right decision. And I can tell you, Damien, that is quite hard. It happened with Rob Henny, with Munster, with us. He came in with a different game plan, and everyone buys in for a little bit of time, but when the stress comes on, it can be very difficult to kind of, change your actions. But if you look back at this Six Nations Championship, and I know you're going to say, oh, there's an ex-player making excuses, but one ruck cleaned out a little bit differently, one pass made perfectly to James Lowe in the corner, and it's a different championship.
Oh, yeah. Like, Peter O'Mahony doesn't get sent off 16 minutes into the opening game. You know, like, everything changes. But the flip side of that is, Joe Punter and the guys writing in the newspapers and the fellas like me on the radio, you don't remember the performances. You remember the fact that Ireland have won two of their four matches, and if they finish fourth in the table or whatever else, statistically it's a bad Six Nations. And that's what the narrative will be for one of these two coaches next weekend.
And it's brilliant that we've got to that state, Damien, because before it was, you know, they all give it a lash, go out there and give it our best. No, Irish people expect us to win at Six Nations, even though, you know, we've four teams playing against England at the weekend who have the deepest pockets when it comes to money, and, you know, the greatest assets in terms of their rugby, be it at senior level all the way down to grassroots level. So look, we bat above ourselves, but we never kind of make an excuse of it. And you're right, we look to go out and win. Speaking of which, Munster are winning 10-7 at half-time.
And just, you know, looking at this, the balancing act that exists for the provincial coaches over the next couple of weeks. So Andy Farrell has, you know, the creme de la creme in the Shelburne Hotel tonight in advance of playing England tomorrow. Johan van Graan and Leo Cullen get them back battered and bruised on Monday morning to try and plan for a Pro 14 final next weekend, the last 16 of Europe the following weekend, and potentially a quarter-final of Europe the weekend after. It's fairly relentless. It's going to be, the sports scientists will win whatever silverware comes our way over the coming months as much as anyone else.
Yeah, and the big thing is peaking at the right times. But I'll be honest with you, Damon, there is times you're sore this time of the year, but you just need to get through it, and you need to kind of find a way. And it's the big emphasis for me over the next 2 weeks for both Munster and Leinster. It's not the internationals, it's the club players. It's the guys that are there at the moment. And I can only speak of my own experience, but at the time, Anthony Foley wasn't in the Irish squad, John Kelly wasn't in the Irish squad, Mick O'Driscoll, they were the drivers, they were the guys that came back and they held the standards. And that's what Munster and Leinster need now.
There's 52 players have played so far this season for Munster. There's 9 of them in Ireland camp, so there's 43 fellas who are waiting with bated breath in the High Performance Centre to welcome them back on Monday. In a word, Ireland or England?
I always go Ireland. I'm sorry, I wish I could use my head, but there's parts of their game. I know I was disappointed they didn't put Ollie Lawrence in at the centre, but I just think that access, 9 and 10, is something we can have a right pop off. And I think we do need to be emotionally charged. I think we need to go to an incredible place, but I'm saying Ireland, in a word.
Okay, well, there you go. Right, we've much more to come in the programme. We've a break to take, and on the far side of that, we're going to reflect on Cheltenham in the company of Jane Mangan.
With Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein, your way.
racing.
They're onto the running now. It is Midella Indo for Jack Kennedy. Plutarch trying to come again. There's a length between them. The Cheltenham Gold Cup goes to Ireland. It goes to Minella Indo. Minella Indo for Jack Kennedy, who points to the skies. He has beaten Plutarch and Rachel Blackmore. Her near perfect week ends with a second place in the Gold Cup. Album Photo has finished third. They were miles clear. The horse that used to be ridden by Rachel Blackmore has carried Jack Kennedy to a famous Gold Cup victory.
This is what I've dreamt of since I was a child. I'm just so grateful to Henry and Mike and Barry Maloney for giving me the opportunity to ride him. I landed over the last and he pricked his ears and he was pulling up, but it wasn't out of tiredness, and when he heard Rachel coming back at him, he took off again. This is what I live for, and I just can't believe this is after happening.
What a historical week for Irish sport. We are delighted to be joined by Jane Mangan. Jane, how are you?
I'm very well, and I am just trying to digest everything that has happened over the last 4 days.
Jane, you must be bursting with pride, though, over the place Irish racing is around the world after this week.
Oh, if anybody is Irish, I'm sure they're bursting with pride. I don't think we've ever dominated a sport so much, ever, at the highest level. We're playing an away game, and we're beating the home team out of sight. 23 of 28 races coming back to Ireland. I don't think it was ever dreamt of that could happen. Going into this week, we thought we had a strong hand, and it just, from the very start, from appreciated dominance in the opening race, right through to Willie Mullins at the end, it was an unbelievable week.
It was an incredible week, and one of the stars over the course was Rachel Blackmore. Her performances today, even alone, are enough to stand out. And Ruby made an incredible point that I didn't even think of. She had more, she had just as many fallers as she had winners. It shows her resilience.
It really does, but you know, you and I and anybody who's watching Irish racing regularly, Dunica, sees her every day and how brilliant she is every day. But not every jockey goes to the biggest stage and performs to the same level under that pressure. Can you imagine the immense pressure that was on her shoulders for Honeysuckle on the opening day, right through to the very end where she rode a stormer on Alaho and Kulixiot in the opening race today? She was adapting to every horse's needs. There's no one set way to ride for Rachel Blackmore. She can adapt to tactics. She can make pinpoint precision decisions. And just her, as you say, she took falls this week, but each race was taken every half hour and every horse was treated separately. And I just loved every time she won. She gave credit to the people who worked with the horses. She's obviously very unassuming. We know that she doesn't particularly like the spotlight. Well, Rachel, you rode six winners of the Cheltenham Festival and one top jockey, second in the Gold Cup. It was, for the sport, for any young boys and girls watching at home, she's an inspiration because she hasn't become an overnight success. She's got there through her own hard work and determination, and she deserves everything that comes her way.
Jane, if you could relive one race of the week, what was the performance of the last couple of days?
Well, watching Tiger Roll was special. Honeysuckle set the tone on day one. Manila Indo in the Gold Cup. I suppose I do think that Tiger Roll is the banner horse. He's a national icon, a sporting hero and a national icon, that horse. And to record his fifth Cheltenham Festival win, when people wrote him off, people thought he should be retired. And when he had started that race on Wednesday, he looked like it was his A game, and he looked like he was never going to get beaten. And it was a great, just for the horse, I was so pleased for him because he had his doubters. And he just proved them wrong.
Just, obviously, you know, the stats will look at, and to be fair, I'm going to rob your tweet here. Is it over 25 owners have won 23 Irish trained winners? Like, it's been a phenomenal week. But all good rivalries need both sides of the rivalry to be competitive in order for it to have a bit of spice. Now, it's all well and good for us to come home going, we've wiped the floor with the UK. But in competitive terms, there's going to have to be one of these years, because we keep having this conversation, one of these years someone is going to have to sit down and have the mother and father of postmortems about how are the Irish so far ahead of us.
that's going to happen in the aftermath of this day. I mean, I've no doubt. I think the UK throughout this week were scratching their heads. Look, many of these horses would have come up for public auction and they were fairly bought. Look, Flooring Porter, $6,000 purchase. Honeysuckle, €9,500 purchase. Appreciated, €18,000. These horses came up for public auction. They were Irish bred, but they stayed in Ireland because Irish people bought them. But a lot of the Cheeley Park horses, for instance, Quilixios or Gerhard and Alaho, they're based in Ireland, but they're owned by British owners. Why did they choose to have them in Ireland? You can ask them personally, but I think a big problem in the UK is their prize money is abysmal. It's absolutely pitiful. We have a better and a better system over here, but we have support from our government and we have brilliant people working with the horses. And yes, there's going to be a post-mortem. This isn't a thing that happened overnight. I think this has been building. 23 Irish winners versus 5. That's been building. That hasn't happened overnight. But as you say, I was just delighted that there was a spread of winners. Irish racing often gets, I don't know, people say that it's dominated by Willie Mullins, it's dominated by one or two trainers. But ultimately, 25 owners enjoyed success this week. For 14 different trainers, they had Cheltenham winners, and I was delighted to see that across the 4 days.
Jane, what did Henry de Bromhead get so right? Just in all the commentary they were saying about the horses looking in incredible condition, but what, from being inside and knowing it, what did you think?
Look, I think Henry's been at this a long time. He's had some good horses down through the years, like Sizing Europe and Special Tiara, but he's just assembled a very strong team of horses. Now, we know 2 weeks ago he inherited Quilixios after the aftermath of Gordon Elliott. That was one of his major winners. But take, for instance, the top two, Manila Indo and Aplutar and the Gold Cup. Those horses have come around because he's got the right owners to get the right horses. He's got the right woman on board. And it's just a real knock-on effect. It's a huge team effort down there in Tremor. And I'm sure Henry would be the first person to say that. But at the same time, his horses, they just peaked at the right time and they have that ability to make them shine on the biggest stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Jane, thank you so much for joining us. What a brilliant weekend. And as always, giving us the best of tips. We'll catch you soon. OK, Damien, Drogheda and Waterford is nil all. And Munster and Benetton is still 10-7. That's it from all of us here. A massive thank you to Laura Lee and Ronan Lawler.